Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. My name is DJ Wooldridge, and this is the show where we like to talk about movies, TV shows, comic books, Mortal Kombat, everything we like to talk about. And with me today is Brian Tong. Brian, introduce yourself to the kids and cats at home. Tell them, if in case they don't know who you are, where they can find you, what you're up to.
What's up, DJ? First of all, man, thank you so much for having me. You know, we met on like Jason Inman's live stream, and so cool to be able to like kind of do something together and talk about something we both love, Mortal Kombat. So really appreciate you having me on, first of all. And then for people that may not be familiar with some of the stuff I do, I kind of do a lot of stuff that covers tech, geek, and culture. If you're into Apple gadgets, Samsung gadgets, things like that, that's a lot of what I do. But also I get to kind of cover some of the cool behind the scenes of movies. Like I'm working on a piece right now with Disney Animation and Raya, how they kind of re-rigged a lot of the faces of the characters and kind of some of the nitty-gritty fun tech behind that and what they did differently for that movie. So I kind of play around in a bunch of these different areas and just feel lucky to be able to have fun, do cool content, whether it's around tech, geek, and culture. And so I guess that's why I'm here.
That's why you're here. Yeah, I'm not smart with the tech stuff, if I'm being honest with you. So God bless you and what you're doing. Like, I want to, normally it's like, yeah, I'll key off the, and it's like, I don't have a question for the tech stuff. I don't know. How about this? What is exciting you right now in the tech space?
In the tech space? Ooh. Well, I would say right now we're lucky to even get so much tech being thrown at us by these companies because of the pandemic. Like, yeah. It's kind of crazy that Apple, I think what, last year they released something like 15 products in 3 months. And then just recently, like, actually a week or 2 weeks ago, they announced basically 5 new products that are all coming out, like a new kind of fancy schmancy colored iMac. And I don't know how much you've been paying attention, but these kind of location, I don't even have one on my desk right now, but these location tracker tags, mm-hmm. Apple calls them AirTags. We've had Tiles and stuff. They're starting to really become a big thing in the tech space that kind of allows you to track devices like your keys, your wallet, or other things. Not people.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet. People.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it's exciting to see these, how now that we have all these platforms and ecosystems, they're starting to leverage it in different ways. Right now I'm actually kind of waiting, because the most excited thing I'm waiting for is like a brand new 16-inch MacBook Pro with this all new processor. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm waiting for on the tech side. And until then, I have this little honeypot that is just waiting, because that thing is going to cost a lot of honey.
Yeah, you got a little piggy bank. You put it in your 10 cents, you know, every day. We'll get there. So speaking of little trackers, do you ever, whenever like a new piece of tech comes out, do you ever be like, this will never be used for anything evil? There's nothing negative this could ever be used for.
I really think of, you know, these companies have to really think it out. So I kind of try and keep an open mind, but know that, I mean, unlike you, DJ, I don't take the evil approach first. I try and you know, believe in the best in humanity. But, you know, anything can be used for good or evil. Mm-hmm. Same thing as movies and TV shows. Yep. So, you know, I've never come across a product that really turned me off. But there's been surprises here and there. I mean, we're playing with grown-up toys, basically, when you talk about your phone, your computer. These are grown-up toys.
Yeah. So, for those that don't know, if you want to listen to this conversations like this early, or the OSA show, full 2-hour conversations I have with my co-host Roxy Stryer, any of that stuff, you can do that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Please, before we get into everything, you know, please give us a 5-star review, please rate, please share. You know the whole deal. But now, for this episode, we are going to be talking about Mortal Kombat. We're going to give our thoughts on that. And we're also going to talk about video game movie adaptations in general. But before we do any of that, Brian, we like to start off each episode by talking about something that we are into. Is there something that you're into, something you'd like to share with the kids today?
I think you have strong opinions on this as well. Do you know where I'm going? Mm-hmm. It's one word, starts with an I, ends with an E. Invincible.
Yes, let's talk about it, because I haven't really talked about Invincible on the show. I'm excited to discuss it with you.
So, you know, I read the comic years ago. I never actually finished it, just because sometimes you get like busy with stuff. So mm-hmm. It was really fun to kind of revisit that world and how amazing it is, and how bloody it is, if that's an understatement. But I do personally, I really, really enjoy this series on Amazon Prime right now. you sometimes the blood gets in the way of the story, yeah. But I'm loving it, and it's something new and different, but it's a show that I can't recommend to my nieces or my nephews or some of my grown-up friends because they're going to get turned off right in the first episode. So that's why it's interesting. It's a compelling show, whether you've read the comics or not, and it completely dovetails differently. The timing of events and things are different, which makes it actually interesting for me to watch.
Yeah.
I like that, kind of like MCU and movies do things differently from the comics, take inspiration. But it's hard to find people actually that are watching this religiously other than kind of the super uber comic book geek culture person.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, it's not a mainstream show. It's just not.
That's true. That's true. And it's interesting how Amazon is kind of like planting its flag and stuff like The Boys and Invincible. And I had I'd read a little bit of Invincible. I have the first couple collections, which I actually think only cover the first 8 issues. They're pretty small, which I revisited after I watched the first three episodes, because the first 3 episodes aired. And I remember when I saw the first episode, I felt it was a little slow at first. It's hitting kind of like traditional, the kid and the power, and we kind of get it. And then, of course, the ending happens. And I knew enough about the mythology to know the basic trajectory. But I remember seeing isn't it like a post-credit scene, the scene with the Guardians of the Globe in the first episode?
Is it post credits? It's literally the very end.
And I was watching and I was like, oh my God, this might be the most violent thing I've ever seen. And you know, like I started thinking back to like all the stuff I watched. I'm like, this might be the most violent thing I've ever seen.
It's right up there. Cause my lady who tends to be very squeamish on things, she's like, I'm not watching the show with you. She was straight up, I'm not watching this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but she ended up watching it cause she actually enjoyed the show. But when some of the it is animated violence that I have not seen before at this level. But even for grown ass men, I'm just like, there's times where I'm just like, and it's like hard to watch. Actually, it's kind of it's hard to watch at times.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because like, you know, something you think about Harley Quinn on HBO Max, that's obviously pretty violent, but it's all pretty tongue in cheek and like whatever. And this is not that. And then I saw the second episode and we started getting into characters like Robot. And I think the demon detective's name is Damien Darkblood. And I was like, oh, I'm into this. Like, I'm into it. Like, I like this. Yeah. The Guardians, or not they become the Guardians of Globe, but the teen team. And that stuff, that part of the world, like, I really got invested. Of course, the cast is insane on it. Like, amazing. J.K. Simmons, Stephen Yeun, Sandra Oh, Marshall Ali
is like, oh, hey, Seth Rogen's in there, you know, and you have to. It was kind of fun to I did casually look at the cast before, and I'm like, oh, it's a lot of Walking Dead people, right? Mm-hmm. But then as I kept on listening, I'm like, wait, who's that? I'm like, is that this? And you look it up, and it's an all star. I don't know if we've seen also as jam packed of a celebrity cast in an animated series like this that I can recall.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, and Jason Mantzoukas, and like, literally, oh, you could just go on and on and on and on. And Alan the Alien, that was the other one. That's the other character that appears in episode 2 that I'm like, I'm into what this is doing. I am a fan of this. And so, like, we're talking about essentially the season finale. It's been announced that it's getting 2 more seasons. Good for everybody involved in that show. And so I guess actually I was going to say light spoilers. It's going to be spoilers. If you haven't seen Invincible, skip ahead a little bit. You know, and of course there's some like the episode where he goes to Mars wasn't like my favorite. But overall, like I was enjoying what it was doing, and talking about the finale, I liked the finale. But there is a moment, for those that don't know, it turns out Invincible, our protagonist, his dad, Omni-Man, is the Superman analog of this world, but is evil. Ooh, shocker. They've never done that before. Evil Superman? Oh, I've never seen it. But anyway.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, he's bad, and they really want to drive home how bad he is. And part of that is really casually dismissing his family, which actually hit me more than a lot of the violence aspect of it. But the violence aspect of it is so the imagery it evokes is so traumatic, but it still has that kind of like 13-year-old in the corner trying to imagine how fucked up he can, that energy of how fucked up can we make this, which made me feel uneasy and not in the way that I think the show intended. I think what the show is shooting for is, look how drastic and almost like a Homelander, similar feelings I have when I watch The Boys and Homelander, how scary somebody of this power is. But you almost get the sense like the creators are like getting off on how messed up they can make it. And that it's like, don't do that. Like, what got me, the Metro scene, the scene with the train, and then the woman with the kid. And I'm like, and then the arm. Oof. And I'm like, I don't like what you're doing in a way that is, you don't want me to like what's happening. I don't like what you're doing. And there's a difference. And I don't, even though I like the show, and I overall like the finale, that made me uncomfortable. What did you think?
Well, there's only one other moment in television, whether animated or not, that kind of pushed me over the edge to be like, I'm done with this series. And quite honestly, it was actually Robert Kirkman's Walking Dead when they spilled Glenn's guts out of his head. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, not only was he a beloved character, I was like, oh, that's too much for me. That was a point where I actually, quite honestly, I stopped watching the series. It was just too much. I'm like, did we really, really have to go like that?
Yeah.
It wasn't because I was mad that they killed the Asian dude off. No. Mm-hmm. that's not.
Well, and listen, things have worked out for Steven Yeun. He is doing fine.
Oh, yeah. He's doing great. And obviously the voice of Mark Grayson in this animated series. So if they had done this, for whatever reason, right, the animation does give you liberties to play and push things that for whatever reason can feel not as real. Because if they did this in a Walking Dead style, I probably would have thrown up. Yeah. Right? Like, I really would have, right? But the fact that they did it animated, even though it shocked the crap out of me and made me go like, oh, like this is so much, it still didn't stop me from watching, right? Mm. And so to your point, I think, yes, someone might be getting off a little bit on this, but it did serve its purpose from a story standpoint. I just don't know if they had to hit us in the face with it, literally. Metro, woman's arm with kid, Steven Yeun's face getting destroyed, which though then leads us to the human moment.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if they had to do it that much. And I know the comic is actually pretty crazy bloody too, but I'm still rolling with it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see season two and season three. I do kind of hope, you know, this coming so close off of like Captain America and the Winter Soldier, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, excuse me, both.
You're right on all accounts.
I'm right on all accounts.
You got the cred. Don't even trip.
if Falcon and Winter Soldier or future Marvel stuff does a light, low key kind of like redemption angle with U.S. Agent, I'm fine with that. I'm good with it. Like I there's problems there, but listen, I was kind of I was kind of with it with Zemo in that show. So it's like, listen, at this point, I'm good to go. I don't do that with Omni-Man after this. Don't, after that scene, you can't be like, well, Omni-Man is his, I don't care. The show needs to be like, no, he's bad. And he can maybe do good things later, but we can't let him off the hook for any of this.
No. It'll be interesting to see where it goes, but I'm more curious, you know, from what I recall, Amazon doesn't typically release viewing numbers, right? I mean, the only thing you can really tell by how popular a show is if you look at the rating and the number of people that actually rated it, that gives you a sense of where it plays within, kind of like when you're on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. That gives you an idea of like, okay, in comparison to other pieces that they've put out, how many people are actually watching it and then actually rating it. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, and I'm loving the fact that it's getting season two and season three, but I wouldn't be surprised if some people that went into this are completely like, I'm not touching that ever again. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a pretty polarizing type show from a standpoint of visually. Yeah. I just don't think people, you know, I mean, maybe I'm overthinking this, but with people being in the pandemic, I think people are looking for a little bit of more brightness than darkness right now to lift them up. And so whether that's on purpose or subconsciously. So I'm just curious, like where does it stand compared to some of its other shows? I don't know.
Yeah, and also like the but you know, where does the budget of something like this stack up against something like The Boys? Is it cheaper? Because that's something I could never figure out. Is it cheaper or more or is it less or more expensive to make an animated show? Like I want to say
cast animation.
Yeah, exactly. Like who
Boys effects.
The effects on The Boys are really good. Like they're shockingly good for like a TV show. But yeah, and I'm all on board with give me more Alan. I would say more robot, but if I would level one more nitpick against this season is teenage robot's voice definitely sounds like a 30-year-old man pitching his voice a little bit higher to sound like a young boy. And so
do we know who the voice is?
I think it's Jason Mantzoukas, because it's a clone of him essentially, right? For people who don't know, robot is a robot, except we find out that he was a person that is dealing with some physical ailments, and he gets a new body cloned based off Rexplode, who's voiced by Jason Mantzoukas. So I think this new younger clone body is supposed to be Jason Mantzoukas trying to do a 13-year-old voice, and it does not work for me. I do not like it. So let's figure something else out there, please, for season two. And let's bring back Damian Darkblood. I know he doesn't really have a mystery to solve right now, but the idea of like Hellboy, but also Constantine, way on board with that concept.
Detective Hellboy, yeah. That's a great combination and analogy. I love it.
Are there any characters? Oh, and also, I even though he's one episode, I think the character's name is Titan. The character voiced by Mahershala Ali, the kind of uses Mark to become like a crime kingpin. Oh. I'm a fan of like crime stories and stuff like that. So it's like whatever he's doing, I'm on board with.
Well, what happened at the ending of season one is there's so many pieces on the board right now that you know they can go in a lot of different directions based on where the comics are at. So I think that made it like, okay, it's not just dad versus son and this moral dilemma. We've got a lot of other things that are kind of cooking and brewing. So that's also why I kind of like really I was like, okay, I'm here for it.
Yeah, and also
overall, I'm not trying to think, you know. I think it was cool how they made Amber a more integral part of the story. They've done a lot of different things that are cool. And so, yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I'm not too nitpicky about it. I'm just kind of enjoying the ride. Sometimes there's times where like, we're going to break down Mortal Kombat, but you know, you can analyze things sometimes. I don't know about you. Sometimes there's certain things that I choose not to analyze just to enjoy it. And sometimes I do analyze it, and I do it so much that I can't enjoy it. I don't know. It just maybe depends on what I ate for the morning. I don't know.
And that's something I've been trying to figure out for myself, less about like just how is the current situation we're in affecting my viewing habits and my perception of what we're watching. Like, would I be more open to certain things if I'd seen it in a theater as opposed to seeing it at home? Mm. Like, all that stuff. And I think that's a really good segue into our main topic for today, which is the Mortal Kombat movie. So Roxy and I were intending to cover it last week, but we could not because we did not get screeners. And now with the response of critics to this movie, I think I know why they were being cagey with those. So, but the good news is you're here to discuss it with me. So I'm very excited to discuss it with you. And we're going to give our, even though it's been out for a week on HBO Max, let's give our brief spoiler-free thoughts. And before we do that, I'll give the internet's brief spoiler-free thoughts. On Rotten Tomatoes right now, the critics' consensus is 55%. Audience consensus is 87%. It's one of those movies. It's one of those. And the consensus is largely for fans of the source material, but far from fatality flawed. Mortal Kombat revives the franchise in an appropriately violent fashion. The audience response is, the acting is spotty and the storytelling is a bit rushed, but if you can turn your brain off for a while, Mortal Kombat delivers plenty of graphic violence and intense fight scenes for fans of the video game series. So that's where we sit with Rotten Tomatoes. What are your spoiler-free thoughts on the movie?
Well, that Rotten Tomato kind of brief synopsis definitely sounds like a 55 score to me. Like, turn off your brain, enjoy the violence.
Yeah,
there you go, guys. You know, spoiler free. Is this a spoiler? No, it's not. I don't think it is. Okay,
I'll let you know.
It's hard for me to watch a movie about Mortal Kombat, even if they have liberty with the adaptation, that doesn't have the actual Mortal Kombat tournament in it. I feel like I was tricked into believing this was going to be a movie about Mortal Kombat when it was more like what's the best, a character select screen. Mm-hmm. This was the character select screen in a movie that took some, you know, really was like, oh, all you fans, we're going to throw you like these accurate fatalities and fun violence. And you're like, damn, that's cool. But this, come on, guys. I'm trying not to be spoilery since we're not spoilery, but yeah. I think it lacked some gravitas. I'm not here to criticize actors who can act better than me, but as a fan, I'm not here to crap on them. But yeah. The acting left needed to give me a little more oomph and substance, especially, and I'm not one of those people like, oh, the 90s were the greatest, but actually the Mortal Kombat movie in 95 did a lot really well with the visuals and effects that they had at the time. So the acting performances and the characters were actually done really well. And I think for me, playing the video game, Mortal Kombat is known as having one of the best, or not even one of the best, it is the best story mode in any fighting video game, mm-hmm. and rivals story modes in a lot of games. The voice acting is amazing. It's on point. It's tongue in cheek. It's campy. It's serious. It's violent. It's dramatic. The movie did not live up to the story mode from the video game.
Yeah.
And so that's where, as a viewer, as a deep fan of the franchise from a young person till a less young person, that's where the disconnect was for me.
So real quick, before I go into my thoughts, we were talking a little bit about this before we went on air. For those who don't know, talk a little bit about your Mortal Kombat bona fides. You have the arcade machine.
Okay. This, you know, I don't like to make this about me, but I guess I will since you asked me.
Please.
A lot of us came across Mortal Kombat in the arcades and were like, what the hell is this? Street Fighter 2 was all the rage. All of a sudden there's blood on an arcade machine. And then there are all these secrets and moves and fatalities. I mean, how could you not be captivated by some dude that knew the fatality telling you the secret, mm-hmm. and then you actually trying it out and happening in person? So I was hooked by that, right? More lifelike digitized graphics. But in college, I had you save money doing odd jobs. I didn't have a real allowance or anything like that. I wasn't one of those kids, but you get like Chinese New Year money, Christmas mm-hmm. money, birthday money, start collecting this little pot, and then doing a few odd jobs. And I had collected at the time $500, and I was deciding on whether I should put it to something useful long term, or should I buy this mint 9 out of 10 mint condition Mortal Kombat 2 arcade machine from Modesto that the dude would drive to my apartment for $500. So you know what I did? I bought the damn arcade machine, and I still have it. Unfortunately, it's at my parents' house right now, sitting in a room. It works completely fine. It is in pristine condition. I was even surprised. And that's how deep my love for this franchise goes. I've been fortunate enough to tour NetherRealm Studios, meet the crew behind the scenes. But I've loved this game from day one.
Yeah.
So it's I have a deep connection to it.
That's amazing. And also, $500 for the arcade, that's a steal.
That's what I'm saying.
I was just reading an article today about what Pokemon cards are going for right now. That's it for a mint arcade machine? You're doing great.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. It was a steal. Once the thing was delivered, the guy drove it, wheeled it up, and I was like, this thing's more than $500. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a steal.
Yeah.
And $500, that's a lot of money for a college kid.
Yes, it is. Yes.
A lot of money you can do a lot with $500 as a college kid. But, I wasn't a partier, so my money didn't go to food and booze. It went to just a Mortal Kombat 2 arcade machine.
I love it. I think that's a responsible decision. I think as a college kid, you could have spent it in a lot more negative ways. I don't know how your parents felt, but I support that decision.
Thanks, Dad.
It's working out for you. If you can't, if you're just listening to the show, you can't see behind him, but he literally has the Sub-Zero and Scorpion masks behind him. That decision, I think, has worked out. It's paid off.
Okay, let me be really nerdy. The Scorpion bust is from the collector's edition of Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah.
The Sub-Zero bust was a gift from friends at NetherRealm. It's only found in the UK edition limited bundle. So you can't get that Scorpion bust anywhere in the US. I don't even know if you can get it online. So it's actually pretty rare. It's, how us geeks like to have our little collectible that no one has or whatever is super rare. But so, most people have the Scorpion, they won't have the Sub-Zero.
That's amazing.
I don't know anyone that does.
Suck it. Suck it, internet. You can't get that.
Love
it.
Love me, internet.
So for me, I had to come into it late because I grew up in a more conservative household. So my exposure to Mortal Kombat was mostly through friends who had it. And of course it's like the forbidden fruit. Like, oh man,
it totally is.
And then I remembered, like, I remember specifically, now I know the character is Ermac, but when I saw the red ninja character, I was like, oh my god, there's a red one, holy shit. And so it wasn't until college that I was finally able to, like, and actually mostly once I moved out here, I want to say that's when Mortal Kombat 9 came out, which is actually a great segue into the franchise, because it's a soft reboot, I think, is a
reboot. Yeah, it was a great, and it was a great one. It was a great one. It reinvigorated the franchise.
Yeah, and so it was like, and of course, immediately fell in love with it because, like you said, not only does it have fun, cool, exciting characters, but the story is interesting. It's like the way I would describe it is it's the plot, essentially, at least at the beginning with the tournament itself, it's Bloodsport but with magic. It's like Bloodsport, but also Lord of the Rings a little bit. And that's such an easy, for me, that's such a simple, especially if you're trying to adapt in a movie, that's so simple. You just look at Bloodsport, you say, like, where it's magic now, and they're fighting for, that's it. That's all you need to do. You maybe take 30 minutes to, like, have a character discover what you're doing, and then do the tournament and fill in character stories as you go. And this movie, spoiler-free thoughts, somehow found a way to make things more complicated, but also dumber at the same time. Like, it didn't, like, we spent a lot of time with Cole Young, who I also can't imagine the logic between, okay, we're looking at a game franchise with over dozens of characters. Many to pick one, and right off the bat, who are some of the most popular ones that you could choose to center your franchise around? Scorpion, he's obviously the most popular, he's on all the box art and everything. Liu Kang, who is the protagonist of, if there is a protagonist in Mortal Kombat, it's Liu Kang. Or if you want to do what a lot, I mean, you could do Johnny Cage. I'm not a huge Johnny Cage fan, you know, but like if the studio's
careful, careful what you say around me about Johnny Cage, DJ, be careful.
And
you, tread lightly here.
And listen, even Louis Tan could be Johnny Cage, whatever. But decide, like, nope, we're going to do a new one. And we spend so much time trying to, like, figure out who Cole Young is. And I don't know about you, but the whole time I was watching the movie, I'm like, I don't care. I don't care about Cole Young. I want to see Scorpion, and I want to see. And then you see Liu Kang with his shirt off, and you're like, why wasn't this your main guy? Like, why didn't you saw this?
Why was this badass?
Yeah. Like, Ludie Lin, like, you know, I like a lot of people had mixed feelings about the Power Rangers movie, but Ludie Lin's good in it. You have him. He was good in that. I don't remember the name of the episode, but he was good in that Black Mirror episode where they're like him, Anthony Mackie.
And, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Well, there's an episode of Black Mirror where these two guys, it's Anthony Mackie and the actor that plays Black Panther, or no, excuse me, Black Manta, excuse me, from Aquaman. And it was Dr. Manhattan and whatever, and the Watchmen show. And they get transported into these game characters, and it's a game where your consciousness goes in there, and then they start having sex as the characters. It's weird. It goes off the rails, I feel like. But Ludie Lin plays one of the
Sound like it at all.
Ludie Lin plays one of the fighting avatars, and he's good in that. And it's like, and that you didn't. How did you not make Ludie Lin as Liu Kang your guy? Why was he not your guy?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anyway,
I thought his acting was on point. I mean, how far are we going into spoiler territory here? Are we trying to stay away from it completely?
So
are we trying to creep into it?
I think it's fair to say spoiler-free feelings are mixed between the two. Actually, my feelings aren't mixed. I love this franchise. I feel like there are things I did like about this movie. I didn't enjoy the movie, and it bums me out. It bums me out. But let's go into spoilers. Let's get into your spoiler thoughts. Everybody, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't know honestly what we would be spoiling, but this is it. This is what we're spoiling. Cole Young gets gold armor with the Mortal Kombat logo. Oh shit. It's what all the kids wanted.
I wasn't asking for it, but someone was. Someone was absolutely asking for it. Look, right before we go to spoiler territory, as a movie viewer, it was hard for me to watch. Mm-hmm. If I really was like, does it keep my attention? As someone who loves the Mortal Kombat franchise deeply, and I'm not the one of those people that holds on to it has to be this way, mm-hmm. but as someone who loves the franchise, it was also hard to watch. there were moments that made me go, yeah, that was fucking cool. And there were moments that were like, oh, they did that right, but they were far and few between than actually being consistently feeling like I really enjoyed this. Quite honestly, the intro of the movie, in my opinion, was one of the best fights. And that kind of sets the bar, but that bar is never met after that original fight with Hanzo and Bi-Han, the human versions of the ninjas, Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I don't know if they do meet up again and it's a fun fight, but I don't know. I felt like that first fight might have been the best fight choreography wise.
Yeah, and you're right too. I agree completely. And it is a bummer because it's like, if your first scene's your best scene, whoops. Like shouldn't you? And I don't know about you, so we're going into spoilers. And that's the one thing that, you know, they build, like, Joe Taslim plays Sub-Zero. If anybody who's seen The Raid, anybody who's watched Warrior, anybody who's seen Joe Taslim in anything, like, you're like, okay, so we're getting people that know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And like you, it's like the first one is the best fight, and then it never quite. And then you get to the whole movie, the whole thing. And then finally Scorpion comes out. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I've been having a hard time with this movie. But now we're going to get Scorpion versus Sub-Zero. And then Cole Young is like, I'm here too. And I'm like, get out of here. Scorpion doesn't need your assist, man. Get out of here. I want to see Scorpion kick Sub-Zero's ass. I don't need him.
Seriously.
It's like if Godzilla and Kong, suddenly Godzuki came up and was like, don't worry, Dad. I got this. And like, no, get the fuck out of here. I don't need this.
This is so true.
Yeah. So I will tell you this. I can tell you the moment I was having trouble, but I can tell you the moment where I'm like, I was done. I can tell you the moment where I had to tap out. And it begins with Kano, just his the eye laser just existing. Like, he just gets the eye laser. It's like, okay. And
he manifested his kana, his inner energy, DJ.
But why weren't
you? It was unlocked by his rage thanks to Kung Lao. Come on, you had to have totally bought into that.
But why is it the one eye? Why is it just the one eye? Because in the games, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it's because he's a cyborg. And so that's why he gets
He has part of his face basically replaced the Black Dragon Clan.
Yeah.
You know, he has a metal implanted laser eye.
And then Jax just grows full-on cyborg arms. He just grows his cyborg arms, and
it's his kana as well. I don't think you were sold on the kana, DJ.
When they first introduced it, I was like, okay, because maybe we feel the need to explain why Liu Kang can do fire stuff, fine. But then when they started trying to explain the cybernex, like, I get that you might be like, oof, magic and cybernetics, like, are we going to explain? But like, people have prosthetic limbs, and then even if some exec was like, oof, no, so he read, you know, Save the Cat once, and he was like, we can only get one high concept thing in this movie, and cybernetics ain't it. But then Cabal's speeding around, and he says, like, oh, I'm in this. He basically admits to being a cyborg, and it's like, but we went through all the trouble of not explaining Kano and Jax's cybernetics, but then Cabal is just like, yep, I'm a robot, basically, and it's like, what's going on?
Look. Isn't it already problematic when it's a tattoo that tells you you're a chosen one? Like, this whole thing, like, ooh, you got a marking. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I got a marking, buddy. Ooh, we're both in this tournament. Oh, but if you kill someone with the marking, then you can get the marking. Okay, now I got the marking. It's mm-hmm. like, really? Yeah. The 95 movie was just like, you're all badass warriors of this world. Let's go fight and figure this shit out.
Yeah.
It wasn't mystery tattoo. Oh, that was lame. Then, and maybe I thought the whole marking, the dragon logo, with the way they initially set it up was like, okay, Scorpion or Hanzo has it, and it's, you know, transferred through the bloodlines. I thought that Cole was a direct descendant. I would have thought, in a weird way, it would have been cooler if Cole manifested Scorpion and became him, instead of it being like, oh yeah, you're like, you have it now. Here's your cool armor with these fighting, like, I don't know, forearm stick blades mm-hmm. that no one cares about.
Yeah.
And you all of a sudden, you couldn't beat a scrub in MMA, but you can take out Goro. Okay, sure.
Like, yeah, and it was interesting cool. too. Like, I needed a palate cleanser a couple days after. So I'd never seen. Have you ever seen the animated movie Scorpion's Revenge?
No, I've seen like the first maybe 40 minutes of it, but I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's not like perfect narratively, but like it's really enjoyable. And I thought the way they handled Goro in that was really smart. But anyway. Yeah, I was with you. I kind of thought, because I think we all kind of assumed, like, with the way the trailer was cut, it's like, okay, because we're trying to figure out who the fuck is Cole Young? Like, what are we doing with this? And so we all kind of assumed, like, oh, maybe related to Scorpion. And then they release that first 7 minutes, and the baby gets hidden in the thing. It's like, oh, he's 100% a descendant of Scorpion. And I was you. It's like, okay, we're trying to make Scorpion more... Because Scorpion's my guy. He's my favorite. Like, I just told you the
classic.
Yeah, the story about, like, me seeing Ermac. And I really actually like playing Ermac a lot. But, like, as I got more into it, it's like, Scorpion's my guy. And so I was like, okay, maybe... But he's not, like, necessarily... It'd be hard to build a franchise around somebody whose most famous look is his face hidden all the time. And so it's like, okay, so maybe we want somebody Praetor... We want somebody that looks like Louis Tan to be our Scorpion. So that's fine. But then we don't... I don't know. A friend told me this. I don't know if it was his point or somebody else was like, but you know when they have those like create a character in fighting games, like you create a character mm-hmm. and it's always like kind of lame. That's who Cole Young feels like. He's like a creative character that they didn't really finish like. And then, but then he
shots fired.
Like you said, like he takes out Goro. He's helping Scorpion at the end. And it's like, what? Wow.
The problem, look, I'm not here to beat up on Louis Tan. I just don't think he was... he had the acting chops to carry this movie as the lead role. I didn't believe a lot of that stuff. I think even when you talk about the performances of the characters, one great thing that I went back and watched the 95 movie after watching this just to be like, was I tricking myself in believing that the 95 movie was really good? It actually did a lot of really good things, but even just something from Shang Tsung's performance from Carrie Hiroyuki Tagawa, mm-hmm. he had gravitas. He felt like a badass, a bad guy, an emperor, a sorcerer. Qin Han, who's people might recognize as in Batman the Dark Knight as the Asian banker who kind of like whittled away. He was Shang Tsung, and he was not as convincing and did not have the gravitas as your big bad that and the person who was kind of manipulating the board of, you know, for the bad guys. So that also was like, I just, you know, when your top dogs can't really kind of bring it the way that you'd hope to, it takes away a lot of, I didn't feel like there was as much mythology here because the performances just didn't give me that feeling like, okay, there's some depth here.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, guys, I'm just being real. Sonya's acting was not very good either.
Yeah. And it's like you said, we're not trying to beat up on Louis Tan because we literally could not. He would hurt that Louis Tan. He would in the real world
legitimately would kick our ass.
Yeah, he would legitimately kick our ass. He's a talented martial artist. Yeah. So that actually goes to one of the questions we have from the Discord, STS2884. Would you be willing to see this continue as a franchise?
Okay,
like this not like a reboot 5 years from now, like this version of it.
Well, you know, they showed me the character select screen. They're teasing me with one of my favorite characters of all time, Johnny Cage. I don't like how this was basically just a setup for the actual movie.
Yeah.
And so this is really, to me, they knew that fans of this franchise are going to watch it and love it. The Rotten Tomatoes score reflects that. The audience score directly reflects that exactly, you know. And so if that was what they were trying to accomplish, they did that. And as a fan, I will give it another. I will watch one more version of it. I think even like Joe Taslim said he's signed on for like potentially 4 more movies if it goes that far. Jeez. I'm serious.
Not as severe as Noob Saibot, I would assume.
Right? Who knows? But very good. Very good knowledge, my friend.
Thank you.
But, you know, I'm going to give it one more go. And I don't know if it's going to turn around, but I'll give it a try. I'm going to keep an open mind, but only because I'm such a hardcore fan. But it's a little hard for me to watch this. I don't even know if I'd watch it a second time. on like voluntarily. I don't know.
Well, and when we're talking about just on the subject of HBO Max, it's, you know, when Godzilla versus Kong came out, everybody was like, I really enjoyed it. But, you know, it just nailed the fights. And it's like, that feels like faint praise. But then you see a movie like this, it's like, yeah, that's all you kind of needed to do, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Godzilla versus Kong, it at least nailed the fights. Like, it nailed the fights. I think I would be okay with this continuing if, and I don't know if the people involved would be willing to do this, you have to kill off Cole Young in the first 10 minutes of the new one. He has to be your first fatality. Wow. Yeah, because not only does that, like, because we're here for the fatalities. They took out Liu Kang in this one. And
Kung Lao. They took out Kung Lao.
Kung Lao, excuse me. Yeah, Liu Kang
Who was one of the best performances of the movie, quite honestly. Well, he didn't have to do much heavy lifting, he was damn good.
It's so frustrating, too, because they kind of hint at this rivalry between Liu Kang and Kung Lao, how Kung Lao is the better one, and it's like, this is your movie. Like, Liu Kang is like...
The Shaolin monks, dude. Yeah, monks.
I was an orphan, and then they found... It's like, this is it. Like, why are we spending time with Cole Young when we could have, like, Liu Kang on the streets... finds out he's just a little scrub, finds out he's actually one of the greatest fighters in the world. Like, that's, I'm in for that movie. So I'm sold.
That's the move. That should have been the movie. There was a video game series called Shaolin Monks. That was literally those two dudes fighting side by side, kicking ass. They had it there, but you know, Kung Lao was one of the fatalities.
Yeah.
who was given a proper fatality from Shang Tsung, by the way. I do want to not feel like I completely hated this movie. I did feel they accomplished a couple things. The fight scenes were actually memorable from a standpoint of they used different settings. Yeah. And yeah, you know, they did different things. It didn't feel like it was the same fight all the time. The best fatality of the movie, in my humble opinion, was Kung Lao versus Nitara, who is this vampire type character who, when I saw her on the roster, I'm like, she's dying because she's not a major character. She dead. Like, right when I saw him, I'm like, dead. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's flying at Kung Lao. He basically, like, grabs her, glides her, and then throws his hat, does the little buzzsaw from, I believe, was that MK10 or MK9? It might have been 9. And she just goes right through it, slides in half, sees all her guts, just like the game. And that felt satisfying.
Yeah. I did see, like, people.
I was like, yeah.
I did see people online be like, man, they did Nitara dirty. I'm like, what, they're the big Nitara fans out there? Like, I don't even remember. I don't even know what game she's in. Like,
I think it was Deadly Alliance.
Yeah. So,
but,
yeah. Where was that?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So I think you're right. I think that was the best fatality. I did like seeing Scorpion do a flaming skull thing.
What do you think of Kano the actor? I mean, I thought he brought some levity. I thought he did a pretty good job. Not the best job, but I thought his role, actually, he served his purpose. Like, he actually made me laugh a few times.
I've got to be honest with you. I'm glad you brought this up, because Kano is easily my least favorite Mortal Kombat character. I do not like fighting him in the game, in the story mode. I do not like his character. And I walked away from this movie with Kano as my favorite character in the movie. Mm. And I was like, that's not a good sign for this movie. Because I think you're right. Like, it's like, he was the only part of it that was like fun. Like, hey, we're having fun here. Like, this is... Mm-hmm. We're not taking this too seriously. We're kind of just you know, enjoying ourselves. And so even though the laser eye thing was hard for me to wrap my brain around, like, at least, like, he was doing the bit. He was entertaining. It's like he had personality. Like, I could tell you, like, who he was as a dude, outside of being, like, serious and like, I need to fight. So actually, yeah, I think Kano was probably my standout character, which again is a bummer. But yeah, if we were to continue it, I think, like, yeah, take out Cole Young, because then it's, you know, people want the fatalities. Have Johnny Cage fatality. I don't know. Like, just like right off, be like, ooh, we're serious. And also, let's be honest, Cole Young didn't really work. So let's just get him out of here. Introduce Johnny Cage. You could actually do kind of a soft reboot, since we didn't do the tournament in this one. It's like,
I love this idea.
Everybody's here. We don't need to explain Jax's arms. We can just... They're cybernetic. Cole Young, did we kill him off, or he dies off screen before the movie? And we just kind of move forward. This is it. It's the tournament. Everybody's kind of introduced. We're down a Kung Lao and a Melina, so they're not showing up.
Kung Lao could potentially come back in some sort of like regenerated spirit form. I'm just saying look, this is a movie, mm-hmm. and no one's dead. Shang Tsung could revive or rebuild this, recover the soul of Melina. But I really think it's a genius idea, and I'm not going to start a campaign like a hashtag like to kill Cole Young, but I really feel like that is what could save the movie for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, to your point, you don't have to introduce a new character. We've got such a literally one of the richest stories of any video game especially from a fighting standpoint, deep histories. I mean, there's people that are basically like scholars on Mortal Kombat history and the clans and the connections. You don't need to create a new person for the movie.
Yeah. You're good to go. It's all right there. It'd be like, yeah. Anyway, I was going to come up with more examples. It's like if you're making a Justice League movie and like, who's your main character? Ooh, the Wonder Twins. It's like, ooh, no, thank you. Why are we doing that? That's the bad call. So speaking about rich histories, let's talk about video game adaptations, because this, it's at least in our humble opinion, continues the glorious trend of video game movies not doing great. So let's talk about that a little bit. We have a question here from Jake Hefner, and it's the multi-tiered question. So let's take this in stages. Do you think video game adaptations are turning a corner? Recent ones like Sonic the Hedgehog and Detective Pikachu were actually entertaining and people seem to like them. Do you think this trend will continue, or were these movies flukes and adaptations will always be doomed?
Well, I think the content, the angle you can take with Sonic the Hedgehog and Pikachu, Detective Pikachu, is lighthearted and fun. And so that elicits kind of a different vibe and energy and feeling to those stories. Whereas Mortal Kombat's, you know, the root of it is pretty dark yet campy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they nailed that balance in the movie, right? Like you kind of have to at least nail the source material vibe. And when you don't, that's a problem. But from a standpoint of video game adaptations, look, I think we know that there's been a lot of back and forth with the studios with the Uncharted movie. Delay after delay, director after director, like what is going on with that? And it still, I think, has another delay recently, just was announced a few months ago. That's a little problematic for me, you know. Yeah. If I'm trying to think of what's one of the best video game franchises that has become a movie series that I felt was successful, maybe Tomb Raider, but I don't know for all the right reasons.
That's maybe a good point, because we got the two Angelina Jolie movies. We're getting another one with, I believe it's still, what's Alicia Vikander?
Correct. Yeah. And so, but people are still interested in that character, which leads me to this point of where a lot of the times, including Mortal Kombat, the story modes are so good that you've got to at least top what they do in the game for us to, or even come close to it, for us to care about the movie. And, you know, there's great games like Last of Us, Uncharted series, you know, you could go Mass Effect, which is still kind of like a choose your own adventure. Making a movie on those properties, you've got to really knock it out of the park. And I think that's pretty difficult.
Yeah, I really agree. I think Mass Effect is a great one, because I think there was talk about doing a movie, and it's like, but why? You know what I mean? Because the part I like about that game is that I get to chart the adventure. And if you were like, well, it's before the events of the game, ooh, then I don't care really. I don't really care about that. And I think Uncharted is a good example too, because, you know, obviously we're getting the movie, but then what differentiates that really in a substantial way from Indiana Jones, like other than your lead isn't 100 years old at this point, like it's, you got a younger lead. Also, side note, nothing against Tom Holland, if I were making an Uncharted movie, I think I just watched Sound of Metal, and the person my go-to for Nate Drake would be Riz Ahmed, or
that's
somebody,
an interesting choice.
Yeah, I think a non-white actor would be good for Uncharted, because there is a lot of he shoots a lot of brown people in those games. And so I think that if you're making a movie, you need to deal with that kind of like what that represents.
If it's brown on brown crime, at least it's a little more digestible.
I mean, yeah, well, you know, when you phrase it it doesn't sound like I fixed the problem a lot. I'm just saying you need to, I would like to think that people making it would like think about that for a second, because it is, love those games. But there is a moment where you're like, man, I'm shooting a lot of pirates from this region, and I don't know how I feel about this. Anyway, And you mentioned Last of Us. We're getting the Last of Us HBO series. And Jake also asked about that. Do you think that will live up to the games? Or will it just be another zombie thing?
It's one of the greatest video game stories we've ever seen.
Yeah.
How does anyone live up to that? That's my point, right? I get it. Like, you want to work with this IP because it has a built-in audience. Well, once you put out a clunker or something that doesn't meet that standard, that audience is never coming back. Mm-hmm. So you really kind of have a one and done shot. Now, Mortal Kombat is kind of different. It's like a fighting game that has stories that you can kind of move in different directions because these characters keep their essence. But I mean, the detail of story that you get from Last of Us and Uncharted and other games along those lines, I'd rather them not. They're going to do it. I don't know. We'll see. To me, the bar is set too high. Like, yeah. When I feel like real emotions and my body's like, you know, stirring, damn, from a video game?
Yeah.
You got to get to another level to do that.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I used to work at Barnes & Noble, and I made this comparison there, and my coworkers at Barnes & Noble did not like this comparison, but I actually feel like there's a lot in common between a book and a video game in that with a book allows you an opportunity to really get into the headspace of its protagonist, where in a similar way, video games, at the time I was talking about, you know, they put you in the action, it's your actions are your character's actions, but they also do a good job of putting you in the headspace as well. And it's such a personal experience. Like, I remember playing Red Dead Redemption. And I brought this up. I think every time I talk about video games, I bring this up.
It's new for me.
Have you played? It is new for you.
I haven't finished it. Right, I haven't finished it. So
played Red Dead 2?
No, but okay. Keep talking. I don't care.
Yeah, well, it's not really a spoiler, but there's a point in the game near the end where you're talking to a character you've helped, a nun, and she's like, you know, you're a good person. And your guy's like, oh, I'm really not. I've done a lot of bad things. And it was really impactful because I've done those things. I did that through him. When he's talking about the bad things he's done, that's me. And it was a really impactful moment of like, oh, like you start the actions in the game, like reflecting over you. And it was just really like very emotionally, like you're talking about, like emotionally moving. You think about Last of Us 2 and the stuff that they do in that. The one thing I will give Last of Us is it's coming from Craig Mazin, who did Chernobyl. And Chernobyl's fantastic. And tonally, actually probably bleaker than the game because it really happened. Like, what happened in Chernobyl really happened. But tonally, they're similar. So that gives me hope that this could be a really well-done show. I am concerned that it might be just a little bit even more high prestige Walking Dead. Because again, the part of the, if we're being honest, Last of Us, they're zombie games. Like, they're really well-crafted ones, but at the end of the day, it's a zombie story. Last part of this question from Jake Hefner. Fun one here. Thoughts on the Super Mario Brothers movie? Is it a bad movie that's still fun, or just a cinematic turd? Now, I have feelings on this. I want to know your thoughts on it.
Well, you know what? I might lose some cred here, but I've never actually decided to watch it yet.
Well,
I've never seen it.
Let me try and sell you on it. Is it a good Super Mario Brothers movie? No, it is not. If you go at it as Blade Runner for kids, I think there's merit in it. I actually will defend the Super Mario Brothers movie because I think it's because it's so gonzo weird for what Mario is. Like, when you think Mario, you think like simple for one, you think fun, you think candy colored, you think really accessible. This is like dark and like gritty in the literal sense, like grimy, like the mushrooms are gross. The fucking Koopa's gross. And so as an adaptation of that material, it does not match that material. But again, as something that like took like the Blade Runner aesthetic and took it to another level, it's like, I actually do think there's merit in that movie. And I was actually really invested. It ends on like a Back to the Future-esque cliffhanger. And I actually didn't want to see what happens. And I revisited it not too long ago. And I'm like, you know what? I still enjoy this movie. I still like it. Bob Hoskins, rest his soul. Anyway, John Leguizamo. Anyway,
I would give it a shot on a rainy day in Southern California, but it never rains in Southern California, as Tony has taught us. It doesn't. I don't know if I'm gonna see it, but I'll take your word. Blade Runner for children makes it a little more compelling and digestible from that description.
See,
I've seen Blade Runner plenty of times.
See, so. And I'll also say I didn't love, but I actually really enjoyed Detective Pikachu. I actually thought that was a pretty fun use of the source material. Didn't love the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, although due to the nostalgia, when they, you know, those photos came around of like the prop stand-ins for Knuckles, the second I saw Knuckles, I'm like, you sons of bitches, I want to see this movie.
That's what I'm saying. They can tap into that. They know they have these, all these movie studios know that with this IP, all they have to do is just throw us a little bone to the fans. And you could arguably like forgive the whole movie as long as they did that one thing. Like, I could totally see a legion of fans say, you know what? I know Mortal Kombat wasn't the greatest, but damn, they nailed the fatalities. I'm good.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of people like that. 87% audience approval.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that reminds me of, you know, when you said it's one of those movies, it's very Zack Snyder, Justice League-ish, you know, lower on the critic side, but super high on the fan side.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, serve your audience.
Yeah, give them what they want. So we got one here from Joey. He starts off saying, I'll ask the obvious question, why is Mortal Kombat not only the greatest video game adaptation ever made, but also the greatest movie in cinema history? We don't need to get into that question. But aside from that, what do you think is the best video game adaptation? And if you could adapt one game, what would be and in what medium would you adapt it into?
Well, I think this question does raise a great point. I would... not because we're talking about Mortal Kombat, but if I had to really think about it based on all the movies I've seen, I would put, and also you have to know the time, right? Mm-hmm. You can't say, oh, 95 to 2021 freaking special effects Marvel. I would still put the 95 Mortal Kombat movie pretty high up there, if not one of the best. I really feel that way.
You're not alone, because one, I really enjoy it. I haven't rewatched it recently. I think it's been at least 5 years since I watched it, but again, it was fun. Like, it was fun.
Yeah,
like,
it was fun. Serious. It was camp.
Yeah, it had the things, and I think a lot of people, I think that is widely regarded. It has Highlander as Raiden. Like, what do you want?
You know, maybe like, it's weird. Like, when I was a young person, I was like, okay, Christopher Lambert, like, okay. But it did, I mean, I would argue that his Raiden was actually better than the Raiden in this movie.
It's, well,
overall, it's
yeah,
a,
yeah,
it's a close, it's pretty close, but I would give him a little bit of the edge just because his acting was a little better. And yeah. I'm saying that with a shaky voice.
Well, and also, it's just, I like the casting of a non-white actor as Raiden. That feels right to me.
I do too. It makes sense.
But he didn't get a lot to do. Like, I was just watching that movie. It's like, what's this guy's deal? Like, who is he to these people? Why does he, I don't understand. Cause as someone who's played the games and watched the other movies, I was kind of like, hey, what's Raiden's deal here? What is he doing with these guys? How is he?
Raiden's a major figure, right? They have him talk a little bit here, but he really doesn't show off his power that much. He just doesn't come off as the intimidating enforcer of Earthrealm that you would hope that he could have been.
Yeah, and especially,
and maybe that's more writing. I don't know.
Yeah, and it would have been cool to maybe touch on any moral ambiguity with the level of power he's dealing with, whatever. So if that is the best one, if that is my answer to that question, honestly, I actually think one of the best movies I've seen actually is Detective Pikachu. Because not that movie doesn't have its flaws, but it is one of those like, hey, do you want to spend 2 hours in a world where Pokemon are just chilling in a city? It's like, oh, yes, I do, actually. Thank you for that. So, and remember being like, a lot of people like, wait, we're Detective Pikachu is our Pokemon movie? And then you see it like, oh, you don't have to worry about gyms. You don't have to worry about, this is such an easy into like what's going on here. That I think that works. But what, and this is one we talked a little bit about it on air before we went on air, what would you adapt? Like, what game do you think would be good to adapt? Because, like, you know, I want to think about like Grand Theft Auto, but then you're like, but then it's just what makes that movie different than like Goodfellas, or, you know what I mean? Not that that games don't have its own energy, but Grand Theft Auto 4 is one of my all-time favorite games. The story in that game is one of my favorite stories. And even then, it's like, yeah, but I don't know what, I know what made that special to me. I don't know how you translate that into a movie.
Well, I think two things that any video game that would be even, you know, pitched here to me has great world building, so that it already has kind of that world building is its character.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, even though I didn't know at the time when we first started talking about this, And I still think it's a very personal story. I am leaning towards Mass Effect. The world building in there is pretty damn impressive.
It sure is.
You also have really interesting, dynamic characters. So as we talk and as I hear what you say right now at this moment, I'm actually going to lean towards, you know, and yeah, we could say on the surface, yeah, it's just another Star Wars movie. But I think Mass Effect does enough different things, and that's okay. I mean, we've seen plenty of, you know, there's Star Wars and there's Star Trek and there's Galaxy Quest. There's plenty of space for multiple takes on this genre. But I'm gonna put my cards in right now, and maybe it changes in the next 5 minutes, into Mass Effect.
I think that's I like your explanation of that. I like your reasoning for that. I'm trying to think of one, you know, because like you said, like we want something that has the good story. I think world building is good because there's so many movies that are sold on. Like, I enjoy Moana, but a big part of that is I like the world. I like spending time in that that space, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is important. I do think there is a way to make a really good Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh, totally.
And we just haven't... I think a lot of Street Fighter 2 as well. I'm not as familiar with Tekken, but I do believe they have a fighting panda in that. That one, that might be hard to bridge that gap.
What was the what was it? Remember that online series? Was that Kevin? People are gonna butcher, kill me for saying his name last name. Is it Tantron?
Kevin Tantron?
Yeah,
I probably am pronouncing it wrong. He did.
So, okay, well, if we are, we both are good. Mm-hmm. That makes it. We're in the same group. But he did that like kind of online Mortal Kombat series that ended up being I don't know if it ended up on Machinima or whatnot, but that actually. It didn't have the best effects, but I felt that actually captured a gritty tone of Mortal Kombat that I really liked. 100%. Like a more grounded, realistic. And I think that's kind of I felt like whether or not, you know, I'm sure he was pitched to the director and maybe they didn't feel he was right for the movie for what they were trying to accomplish. But that's a tone that really worked and maybe needed more support financially for in other ways. That's how you do a Mortal Kombat movie, if you kind of capture that energy and vibe, without a doubt.
Well, I also kind of wonder if maybe, you know, with video games, especially like sprawling video games, if adapting, you know, actually what a really, it's not an adaptation of the game. So I was going to say Witcher, but it's adaptation of the source material. It's an adaptation of the books, not the games. But I do enjoy the Witcher show. Not as much as I enjoyed the games, but I enjoy the show. But I wonder, even with something like Mortal Kombat, if like a show, an HBO series is the way to go. So because there are so many characters, there are so many things you can explore, so many avenues you can go down. And you basically, then the rules kind of become the same as if you've ever watched Warrior on HBO Max. It's like you just get one crazy fight an episode. Like we get one fight an episode and then the rest is you're filling out the world and you're doing the story stuff and you're doing all that. I think that could be really cool. I would also like to... I'm hoping that we're able to get a chance to revisit the Sonic franchise as a movie at some point or a show, because I don't know if you were part of the scene, but I remember when I was a kid, there were actually two Sonic Saturday morning cartoons. One was not great. The other one was really good, ahead of its time. There was an Archie comic that was originally loosely based on the show, but then kind of became its own thing. And I think the stories there are actually really engaging and interesting. And I think I was a Genesis kid, so I grew up with Sonic. So I think
I'm a Genesis kid, man.
So I think with those, I think there's part of the strength of I think Mario is that the story. That's why the franchise I think has been so successful. The story kind of doesn't matter. It's all about the gameplay. The Sonic games actually do have a narrative to them. They have even the earlier games. They have a clear structure, and so I think you can do some really cool stuff with that. That I would like to see them. Not that there weren't parts that are enjoyable about the movie, but it largely got rid of most of Sonic's mythology so we could hang out on Earth. And I'd like to, I think there's a cool way that, you know, maybe it's a fully animated show or movie. I'd like to see that, but let us know, find us online. I don't think there's comments for podcasts, but let us know. You know what? If you listen to this podcast on Spotify, we can put questions to that. So I'm going to put the question on: what video game do you think deserves a movie adaptation. Boom. That's going to be on the show. I swear to God, I'm not going to forget like I have other times. Don't worry. It's going to be there. I swear to God.
DJ, did you actually give us your game, though? You said you liked the Witcher series, but did you actually give me a game?
That I think should be adapted into to a show?
Yeah.
It's
or a movie. You said movie. Movie. Show is different than movie.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I'm going to say my go-tos are ones that we've already done, just not as well as I think we can, which is like Mortal Kombat and Sonic. I think it's like, well, let's go back.
Wow, DJ, you told me to come up with one and you went with the topic of the show. That is not acceptable as a first time guest.
Here we go. Here's what I think could be cool. I know people have pushed back on this, but I think you could do a really good Legend of Zelda movie.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. That's great. Great world building, great characters. Yes,
you either need to accept like, hey, Link doesn't talk, or you need to let your audiences accept like he talks in this Link talks. He does. We're gonna have to he's a dude, he's a character.
Okay, so if they made the Zelda movie during the early 2000s, would Orlando Bloom have played Link?
Yes, 100%. 100%. That's not even and Johnny Depp would have been in there somewhere doing, so he would have been something. Yeah. Let's get Dwayne the Rock Johnson to be Ganon. since we're going on a Nintendo kick, Metroid, I think you could do something really cool.
Yes.
Well.
Oh, great call.
Because that's
Metroid. You know, also the Nintendo franchises, because they're so like kind of kid family friendly, I think those are rich and ripe. Although, like you said, Blade Runner for kids was Super Mario. Mm-hmm. Don't know if I'd go in that direction, but I do feel that they have the opportunity to put a different twist that doesn't have to be as cheery and more darker, more grown up, not super dark, but just more mature. Metroid would be a great one. Well, that would be a killer one.
Especially if you go off like the tone of like Metroid Prime, that kind of tone. It's like,
I love that.
Yeah, you're in, you're sold. I also, this might be dumb, but I wouldn't hate like if you started building up your Nintendo movies to like a Super Smash Brothers movie.
I knew you were gonna go there. I saw your eyes and I'm like, you know what? You don't even need much development there. Just do the movie. They did Mortal Kombat.
That brings me to my real answer. I had to go through all that to come to it, because who's my favorite character in Smash Brothers? It's Fox McCloud, and Star Fox 64 is one of my all-time favorite games. That was when we transitioned from a Sega household to a Nintendo household. And Star
no
Fox.
Zone.
Give me a Star Fox something. Give me a movie. Give me a show. I think Star Fox is really cool. There was actually an animated series when I was a kid called Bucky O'Hare that had similar energy to what I think a Star Fox movie would be, but I would be there for that.
Okay, see, now I put you on the spot and you came up actually with three killer picks. We didn't even like mine the Nintendo franchises. Like, isn't that interesting how our brain initially, I don't know if it's almost like we treated like the Nintendo franchise, like, oh, those are like younger, brighter properties that aren't movie ready. And then as we kept on talking, those would be the best movie adaptations.
Yeah.
And you have a lot more liberty to play with them to give the audience something different. That's the thing, right? You got Last of Us and Uncharted. Those movies, those franchises are so defined with those characters.
Yeah.
From a more, I guess, realistic human dilemma perspective. Whereas with the Nintendo franchises, they do dig into that, but I think you can go in a lot of different directions. Ooh, I'm loving all those picks, man.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, because like, especially if you go to, I think of those, Legend of Zelda or maybe Metroid has the more, they're more story driven, but even then it's loose enough that like, listen, if you have Link, if you have Ganon, if you have the Master Sword, if you have Hyrule and Zelda, you're kind of good to go. Like whatever, you can even set it in another era. Those games jump around in time so much. You can kind of like, this is an era we haven't talked about before. But again, since we're both Genesis kids, I want to throw this one out there.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Vector Man. I would like to, if anybody played Vector Man, I got a lot of love for the Vector Man franchise. Basically, it's basically Wally if he could shoot. The humans abandoned Earth. Vector Man's left behind to clean it up. And one of the other robots left behind to clean stuff up, his head gets replaced with a warhead and he becomes the bad guy of the franchise. Okay. And it's like, hey, Wally, but with action, I'm in.
Okay. So now since we're mining Genesis franchises at the brief moment, you could definitely do a Shinobi movie, mm-hmm. but it would just end up being like a ninja movie.
Yeah.
Okay. If you really want to take a risk there, which movie studios do not want to take a risk on,
they do not.
I'm going to suggest a horrible idea for them. Echo the Dolphin, the movie.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
A horrible idea that could still work. Maybe.
Can I be honest with you? I don't think I played it, but I was never any good at it. Like I didn't know what the game wanted me to do. I couldn't figure it out. Like
you had to swim and break through barriers, DJ.
I was bad at it. Whatever that game wanted me to do, I was bad at it. This brings me to another good adaptation is the Castlevania anime series on Netflix is really good.
Real good. Real good. Yeah. Real great. And see, that's the thing now these days. I don't think it's appropriate to think about all these, you know, and you made a point earlier and I kind of pushed you back towards, no, you said movie, but the medium is different now where it's not about a movie. I think that we look at the formula of K-dramas, which spend an hour and a half just mining the character nuances. And these are series that are 10, 13 episodes, an hour and a half each. It shows that when done properly, it doesn't have to be a movie. It doesn't have to be a TV show. It can be a K-drama. It could be any of those things. It's just more the storytelling has to be done justice. And whatever medium does that the right way, then it's going to work.
Yeah.
Of course, you also have to have a good writer. You have to have a good director. That's kind of important, too. And good actors. Mm-hmm. But that's why this stuff is so hard, right? That's why it's fun to be a critic of this stuff. But at the end of the day, there's so many moving parts that in a weird way kind of have to work together perfectly for even the message and the tone that they want to come across. And then it's just up for us to decide if we want to buy or sell it.
Absolutely. And I think that's another great example because, you know, people talk about the video game movies like turning the corner similar to the way comic book movies have. And it does help you appreciate like I think there's so many Marvel movies at this point that are part of that cinematic universe that like, you know, some of them I'm more critical of than others, you know what I mean? Because they're varying quality. But then you just the overall consistency, though, even for the ones that aren't as good as the others, it is crazy what they've been able to accomplish with that. When like we struggle with like one Mortal Kombat movie, like
exactly, yeah. Right?
And I think part of it is taking the source material seriously. Not that it needs to be serious, but like, you know, like at the end of the day, yes, I've got this brand, but I also need to make a movie people actually want to watch. I can't just throw in catchphrases and call it a day.
Well, what you just said is exactly what Marvel's doing. They know they have these hardcore comic geeks that are going to dissect this stuff like to oblivion. But then they're serving a movie that is really made for a general audience. And if you know more of the lore and if you care about some of those details, you'll kind of get to that next level or next layer of interest and enjoyment. But really, they're just making great movies that my girlfriend, my mom, my dad actually could still enjoy watching. That's not that easy, right? To serve all those levels. And so, hey, they're magic. I mean, I don't know. Everything they touch has turned to gold still for the most part.
And wait,
what's a movie you don't like from the franchise?
Thor of the Dark World.
That one's a gimme.
There's a lot of twos. There's a lot of twos that are weaker. Thor 2, Ant-Man 2. Mm-hmm. Iron Man 2, I think, is good up until the end, and then it really falls off a cliff. Some of the two,
well, you know,
Avengers 2.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you know, it's too hard. What James Gunn accomplished in the first movie, it was incredible. It's so hard.
Yeah,
to top that.
But then you have Cap 2, and you have like pretty much any Captain America movie, and now including the TV show. It's like, I don't know what it is about this character, but it's for some reason it's hard for this franchise to derail this character. And the other interesting thing too that like I think people get so focused on putting on all the things. Like I really enjoyed Civil War. I know some people that might be hardcore fans would be like, "Well,
I love it."
Zemo wasn't the Zemo I know from. It's like, give it time because now we're Falcon Winter Soldier, and he's got the mask and everything. And also, I think his motivations are more interesting than his motivations in the comics. So it's like,
and he put his hand near the side of his mouth to emphasize.
Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that I think his motivations are really interesting, and also he has a point. Like imagine if Zemo lived in the Boys universe and not the Marvel universe. You'd be like, yeah, Zemo's the good guy. He's only the bad guy in that franchise because he lives in the universe where Captain America's not a jerk.
Anyway, that is true.
Technically, the Captain America that started Falcon and Winter Soldier, the John Walker one, was kind of a jerk, but whatever. Anyway, but I think that's another thing is they're focused on making the movies good and not so hung up. You know, it's that balance of the specifics of the lore, but also making a movie so your mom or your sister doesn't need to know that Zemo has this purple mask. None of that matters to Civil War, so we're not going to get into it. And then give us enough time, we'll get there. We'll get to all that stuff.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, look, the argument, I'm sure you've talked about this on your show before. I don't understand, if you're a fan of comic books, why you want to see the exact same thing you read play out exactly on screen. Now, there's times where you might want it to hold true, but I want to see different shades. Like, Zemo is arguably one of the most interesting villains. He's a human that dismantled the Avengers, who have still have fallout and repercussions from what he did to this day, and he's a regular dude.
Yeah.
I mean, he's military trained, he's really smart, but he's not like a superpower Thanos, and he's still alive too. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that it's important for people to kind of let go of their, like, this is my childhood stuff. Cause I was the deepest comic book reader. No one cared about Iron Man when I was reading comics.
Yeah.
He was a C-level, D-level character at best.
Yeah.
Let's be real. So, you know, throw all that stuff out the window and, you know, enjoy it. And thank God, you know, we have these comics that can give us some great source material and moments to remember that show up in the movies. But I think, like, letting it go and being, you know, is probably better and healthier mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and especially, and now we're getting to, you know, Shang-Chi, and it's like, that's a character. Mm-hmm. I like that character. I like that when he shows up in a comic. Could I tell you a Shang-Chi story? No, I don't know. There's not many, actually.
There's really not many.
Yeah. And so the cool thing about that movie is that, like we're talking about with some of these, you know, some of these video game adaptations, is you can kind of do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Shang-Chi's greatest enemy is his dad.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's literally it. That's all. And he's the master of Kung Fu. So that was my, not to derail us from our conversation, but that was my one hang up when we were going in this movie. It's like, whenever you do that movie, he's got to look like he can literally kick everybody else's ass, because that's his thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's his one. He doesn't have a shield. He doesn't have a suit of armor. It's that he can kick anybody else's ass. And so when I saw that trailer, I'm like, that's it. That's the guy. That's so I'm sold. So anyway, yeah. We're way off the rails now, but get whoever directed the Shang-Chi movie to do your Mortal Kombat movie. Anyway, before we go, remind the kids at home where they can find you, what they should be looking out for.
Yeah, so you can find me. My channel is pretty easy, youtube.com/Brian Tong. That's Brian with an I. Don't get it twisted, because that's important. Some people really care about that. I don't as much.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter, Brian Tong as well. And I really just cover everything in the tech geek culture space, a lot of tech. But I'm a geek at heart, and so I do cover a lot of geek stuff as well. And sometimes you get some really cool behind the scenes stuff and interviews. You know, I was fortunate enough to interview the director of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I almost called it Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it, quite honestly, as you follow this stuff more, it's really interesting to talk to the producers and the writers and the directors, sometimes more than the actors. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to break it to you guys, and I love the actors, but you get more good stuff a lot of times.
I liked Malcolm Spellman, the showrunner. He did an interview where he was talking about, like, how apparently when they wrote that scene where, like, Falcon couldn't get alone, and apparently there was, like, a lot of, like, not actually pushback, but, like, Kevin Feige and everybody was like, wait, is this what? And it's just, I love the idea that this long into the franchise, somebody can, like, throw an idea out there that, like, throws everybody for a loop. Like, wait, actual real life issues? Like, wait, are we going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They did. And that's one of the reasons I really love that show is Sam Wilson has real problems. He's got,
yes, sir,
everyday issues. Well, that's super cool. Everybody should go check out Brian's channel. Go subscribe, Brian with an I. Don't get it twisted. And you can follow me everywhere that matters at DJ Talks Trash. You can follow this show at Only Stupid Answers. But on Twitter, you're going to want to yank the vowels out of stupid. Please, I was going to say like and subscribe. Please share this show. 5-star reviews, all that. Again, if you want to check out shows like this, episodes like this early, you can do that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. And we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.